Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Welcome to the Rusk Report on ESPN AM 1520, blanketing 17 states and much of Canada, as we have received letters as far away as Scandinavia and New Zealand at ESPN AM 1520. My guest today is an author, well known in the television field, entertainment, Paul Noble, and he also has a lovely wife, Paulette Cooper Noble. The book is My First 83 Years, but looking at him in person, I think he looks about 63. Paul Noble, a Queens, New York native and Cornell University graduate, has produced Eleanor Roosevelt's television show, Bishop Fulton J. Sheen's program, Midday Live, and numerous other programs. After retiring from Lifetime Television, where he chose movies, he moved to Palm Beach, Florida, where we're taping, with his lovely wife, Paulette Cooper Noble. A man of tremendous accomplishments, he understands the entertainment industry frontwards and backwards. And we're going to be talking about this book that our listeners throughout the U.S. and Canada can go to Amazon and buy this book. It is My First 83 Years by Paul Noble, our guest today on the Rusk Report. Now, Paul, in this book, you have a whole chapter on Eleanor Roosevelt, the former First Lady of the United States, who was a flamboyant woman, a colorful woman.
Flamboyant? I don't think I would use that word at all.
Okay. How would you describe her?
Well, she certainly was more gray than flamboyant.
Okay.
However, her personality and her compassion made her an extraordinary force. You know that Harry Truman called her the First Lady of the World. She was the woman who shepherded through the Declaration of Human Rights at the United Nations. This is after her husband passed away. So she indeed had a second life after being First Lady. A woman whose compassion never ended right up to the end. She died at the age of 78, by the way, still taping television shows, still lecturing on the circuit, and still writing her daily columns and so on. She was an amazing force. There's never been anybody like her since that time, and there was never anybody like her before that time. She invented the idea of a First Lady, in a sense, because she had the energy and the stamina and, as I said, the compassion that maybe 100 people had all rolled into one.
Sounds like an amazing woman. I never met her, but it's a very interesting chapter in your book.
Actually, it's two chapters on Mrs. Roosevelt. We did two chapters. The first chapter is really about her first year working at WGBH-TV in Boston and at Brandeis University on the campus of Brandeis, where we taped the show. And we talk about her meeting with JFK and so on. It's really an extraordinary story. That story in itself is almost worth a book. As you know, JFK needed as much support as he could get politically, and he thought that Mrs. Roosevelt's support would be truly helpful to him in terms of winning the election. And so he wanted Mrs. Roosevelt on the show, and he acceded to her wishes to do a few things. One was to promise that he would institute a Peace Corps, a national, international Peace Corps, if she supported him. And he also agreed to be on her television show and announce it on that show. And that program, which was the second time we worked with JFK, was done in the White House basement, in the very room in which Franklin Delano Roosevelt conducted his fireside chats. Now, do you know what a fireside chat was?
Oh, I know what they were. Yeah. On radio, where he spoke very warmly and matter-of-factly to the people of the United States.
And he did that to help us get through the Great Depression and the Second World War. He did 30 odd shows out of this room in front of supposedly a fireside. It wasn't. It was a room under the west portico of the White House in the basement, no fireplace in sight. But it was the only room at the time in the 30s and 40s that was soundproofed in the White House. And that's why they chose that room. Well, by the time I got to it in February of 1961, a few weeks after he was inaugurated, this room was stuffed with all of the furniture that Jackie Kennedy had relegated to the basement because she could not stand Mamie Eisenhower's taste in furniture. So all the furniture was there. So the White House aides and I stripped the room of this furniture, and we set up a little studio so that she could interview JFK. And in that 15-minute segment, he announced the Peace Corps. Now, I must add a couple of other things that happened during this this period, because just as we were taping, I was in the bus, the remote bus outside the studio. Pierre Salinger, who was the press secretary, stepped up behind me and he said, "After you have finished a segment and you faded to black, come up on the presidential seal, cue the president, and he will talk for 55 seconds about the Red Cross blood bag." Now, I had heard that JFK had a photographic memory. I'd never seen it in action, of course. And he did it. We came up on the president. He talked for 55 seconds. He had, must have seen a piece of paper, a one sheet, just before taping. And he had it perfectly timed out and precisely delivered. It was an incredible moment. So I realized that he had a special technique in his hip pocket that he could call upon at any time to sound as though he was well informed and that he was well prepared.
Let's talk a little bit more about President John F. Kennedy, and it's interesting that we're taping this program in Palm Beach, Florida, where President Kennedy spent many winters during his short lifetime, and his father and mother were here in Palm Beach, Florida.
You know, I put on my Facebook page at this time of year, I put up a photograph that I found of the Paramount Theater building, which still exists, by the way, in Palm Beach on North County Road. And the Paramount Theater's marquee says, "Merry Christmas to JFK and the whole family." And it is an incredible shot to see today in the context of what that building is now. Now it's a series of offices and a little church, but it's maintained magnificently. And this community really adored the Kennedy family. And they, wherever they went, became a very important landmark immediately.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about JFK the man. You talked about his memory. I knew very well his two priests, Monsignor Jeremiah Patrick O'Mahony and Father Hartnett, who was very close to Rose Kennedy. In fact, you were kind enough to take me to the show Rose by Lawrence Lehmer, who was also a Palm Beach resident when it aired. It was shown in Boca Raton. Let's talk about you spent time with President John F. Kennedy. You were with Pierre Salinger, who ran the press conferences at the towers here.
I'll tell you a very interesting story.
Tell us about John F. Kennedy.
I'll tell you a very interesting story about him. The first time we met him, he was a little unsure about Mrs. Roosevelt because she hadn't yet committed to him, to supporting him. And so he did come to Brandeis University to do that show, thanks to our executive producer, Henry Morgenthau, who knew him from prep school days and who convinced him to come and to let him know that it would be very important for Mrs. Roosevelt to have an opportunity to see him face to face. Well, he walked in, and I said, Senator Kennedy, would you be willing to wear one of our TV blue shirts so your face color comes out all right on camera and so on? He said, oh yeah, absolutely. So he gave me his shirt, a J press, 16 and a half inch neck, 35 inch sleeve shirt, and I gave him one of ours from a whole pile of shirts that I had amassed for this occasion. Now, his shirt was monogrammed and everything. So, fool that I am, I sent it back to him. After I had it laundered, I sent it back to him at the Senate office building instead of keeping it. I mean, I could be wearing that shirt right now while I'm
talking. You could also
this
sell
interview.
It for $100,000.
That, or donate it to the Smithsonian. There was any number of things. But President Kennedy, then Senator Kennedy, was an extraordinary man who did not know that first time that we met, that at the press conference, immediately after the taping, that one of the people in that press conference, in fact, the man who asked the first question, was the man who literally did in his father. Now, our viewers may not, or listeners may not know, but in 1939, our ambassador to England, to the court of St. James, was JFK's father.
Who was pro-Hitler.
Pro-Hitler, Joe
yes, he was.
Kennedy. And he came to this off-the-record press conference in a hotel in Boston and said, now, he said, I don't think Britain should get our support at all.
Right.
Let them be absorbed by the Nazis. It's the Germans. It's the best. I mean, it's the only way. They are not going to survive, and we shouldn't waste our efforts to help them. Now, Mrs. Roosevelt told me this story. The next morning, she saw the story, which was printed in the Boston Globe and every paper worldwide. And she went with the paper right into Franklin's bedroom and said, Franklin, fire that man. And that's how JFK's father lost his job.
Well, that was terrible how a man could have been pro-Hitler with his horrible, vicious, animal-like behavior. We're talking to Paul Noble. The book is My First 83 Years. You can get it at Amazon. It's by Paul Noble with Paulette Cooper Noble. And it talks about all his meetings and experiences with Muhammad Ali, Lucille Ball, Baryshnikov, John Belushi, Bill Boggs, Alan Burke, Marc Chagall, and it goes on and on and on. Again, get it at Amazon. It's a quick read. It's very interesting, very colorful, with so many famous people that he has met.
You didn't mention Bertrand Russell.
Okay.
Now, your listeners know of Bertrand Russell. He was a great philosopher, a mathematician,
right,
a roué, a socialist, and an atheist. And he was very famous in Britain. So when we did a few shows in England
right.
in 1960, that was the first time I was over the other side of the Atlantic, Bertrand Russell was top of our list, and sure enough, he accepted to be on a show. So I was seated next to him at lunch by everybody else. Mm-hmm. All of the other celebrity politicians, Hugh Gaitskell and Lord Boothby, and all those people said, came over to me and sotto voce said to me, you sit next to Russell because he vomits, you know. He just can't hold down his food. So they'd obviously had experience. So I ordered bouillon and ice cream for him, and we had a very nice lunch, the rest of us. We had the Scottish salmon and the duckling and the sherry trifle, like you would expect at a BBC luncheon.
Right.
And Lord Russell held it all back, and he was a wonderful, wonderful raconteur, a wit. He was 88 at the time.
Yeah.
And I handed him the standard release form. And at the bottom of the standard release form, there's a place for parent signature. And he said, must I have my parents sign this? And I said, yes, Lord Russell, teasing him too. I said, where does your father live? And he said, well, that is a question that can only be answered by theologians. Now, that's the kind of wit that you pray for, and you never know what you're going to get.
Coming from an atheist.
Coming from an atheist. Well, that's from Lee. Marvelous guy.
That's good. Well, if anyone is listening and would like to drop us a note, we'd like to hear from you. Please write to Brian Rusk, ESPN Radio, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. We always greet cards and letters from our Canadian and European listeners. Please subscribe to the Ampol Legal newspaper that has the latest events on polkas and Polish culture in Western New York, the Ampol Eagle newspaper. And this program follows many we've had with authors in the last 30 years, including Morris West, author of Shoes of the Fisherman, General Alexander Haig, who wrote Caveat, and Douglas Fairbanks Jr., who wrote Salad Days. Drop us a note. We'd like to hear from you. For those who just tuned in, Paul Noble, a Queens native and Cornell University graduate, has produced Eleanor Roosevelt's TV show, Bishop Fulton J. Sheen's program, Midday Live, and numerous other programs. The book, again, is My First 83 Years. It is available at Amazon. We're talking about the highlights of the book. Now, you're not Catholic, but you had great admiration for probably one of the most prolific and brilliant Catholic leaders in the last century, who you were involved with his television show, Bishop Fulton Sheen. Tell us, what was he like? Was he this big TV star? What was he like?
Oh, no. About as humble and as amusing as anyone could be in that exalted position. You know, in 1939, well before I was in the television business, but in 1939, he conducted mass at the skating rink at Rockefeller Center in a test broadcast for the then fledgling channel in New York that RCA had just set up. This is about the time of the World's Fair in 39, but Bishop Sheen did the mass. I don't think he was yet a bishop. I think he was just a priest. I just don't know. Anyway, the reason I know that is because the fella I worked with who directed the show for us, Leo O'Farrell, was a choir boy in a local New York City parish who was invited to be in the chorus behind Bishop Sheen during this mass. So he had later joined this our station, Channel 5 in New York, in the 50s, and he then, as an adult, moved up the ladder until when Bishop Sheen was ready to do a color series, Leo became his director. So Bishop Sheen had a long history in television, and he really understood the use of the medium. He knew how to look into the camera, something that not everybody learned. I always tell people when I prepare them to go on television, don't worry about a huge audience. Just think of one woman in hair curlers standing at her ironing board and try and get her attention. Well, he had that perfectly done. He had these thick set eyes, which helped also. He was a really great communicator, and he never talked above the audience, but he brought them up to a level of philosophy and of spirituality that very few people ever considered doing. And so he was a real competitor to Milton Berle, Mr. Television, who was next door on Channel 4 in those days. And he had a great sense of humor. He wasn't above telling jokes. Do you want me to tell you the joke that I use as an example?
Noted entrepreneur and international business leader John Castle, chairman of the board of Castle Harlan Inc., when I read from Paul Noble's book, again, the book is My First 83 Years, The Joke, Castle was just thrilled and laughing so hard. So tell us the famous joke of Bishop Sheen in the book, My First 83 Years, Paul Noble.
I don't know where he got this joke, but it tickled him. So he told it more than once that I can recall. A man goes to his barber and says, I need a particularly good haircut right now because I am going to Italy. And the barber said, wonderful. How are you flying? He said, well, we're going Pan Am. And Bishop, the barber says, oh, no. You can't go Pan Am. That's a terrible airline. It's always late. And where are you staying? Well, we're going to stay at the Excelsior Hotel on the Via Veneto in Rome. Oh, no, what a terrible, decrepit place that has become. And what are you going to do while you're in Rome? Well, we have a private audience with the Pope at the Vatican. Oh, that's impossible, the barber said. You'll never, ever get to see him. 3 weeks go by, and he comes back for his haircut. And the barber says, well, how was your trip to Italy? He said, it was sensational. We went Pan Am. Not only was it on time, but they bumped us up to business class. It was just, we slept all the way. It was wonderful. We got to the hotel. They gave us a newly redone suite. They threw in the continental breakfast every day at no extra charge. It was magnificent. And the barber said, did you get to see the Pope? Oh, yes, yes. We had a private audience with the Pope. And what did the Pope say to you? He said, where'd you get that lousy haircut?
It's a great joke. It's very good. And it's all in the book, My First 83 Years by Paul Noble. And now I want to talk about Miss Lovely, your wife. We have about 5 minutes left on the Rust Report on ESPN AM 1520 radio. If you have any thoughts or comments, please write to Brian Rusk, ESPN Radio, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. Now, Paul Noble is married to Paulette Cooper Noble. She has written 26 books, over 1,000 articles, and has won 9 writing awards. And the book that is so compelling is about her horrible, horrible experiences with Scientology, but also the book tells about her very tough childhood, losing her parents to the horrible concentration camp Auschwitz in Poland. Let's talk about your divine wife.
Let me just say that Paulette was never a member of Scientology. She was an investigative reporter.
Right.
And she was outraged because outrage was almost her middle name. Her father was taken to Auschwitz 3 days before she was born. Her mother, perhaps a few weeks later. She and her 2-year-old sister were rescued from the back room of an apartment by a relative. They were shuttled between orphanages, and for a full year they were really on the run. Finally, at the age of 11 months, they found themselves, remember my wife was 11 months old, her sister 3 years old, they were about to be deported by train. And, you know, children, infants, young kids, they'd be murdered by the time they got there, if they survived the train trip to Auschwitz. Well, a friend of her father's, bribed a Nazi guard, the same kind of guard that you would see in the movie Schindler's List, and managed to get Paulette and her sister out and into another series of orphanages in Brussels, which was a bit safer. And Paulette was adopted at the age of six and brought to the United States. But outrage, as I said, was something that she understood. And as a young woman, she found a cult that was really upsetting the apple cart for a lot of people. She called it a cross between the mafia and the Moonies. And that was Scientology.
Well,
and she wrote a book called The Scandal of Scientology. And today, her latest book is Battlefield Scientology, which she's co-written with the author of the biography of Paulette Cooper, The Unbreakable Miss Lovely. So, she's been through it. Anyway, she's a fabulous woman, a great wife, and I met her before she got involved with Scientology. And if I had married her then, it's very possible she never would have discovered this subject to attack. Mm-hmm. So in a way, I'm partly responsible for her getting involved in this.
Well, it's a great book about your wife. Again, the book we're talking about today, and there is a whole chapter on Paulette Cooper Noble. The book is My First 83 Years, available at Amazon worldwide. The author is our guest today, Paul Noble. He also spoke where we hail this program from in Buffalo, New York at Damon College with his wife. And we'll have coming up on this program former Ambassador Eric Javits, Congressman Chris Collins, Special thanks to those who contacted me regarding George Frank Caruso, Rich Kelman, who was with the NBC affiliate in Buffalo, and Mike Cracker with Unshackle New York. Let's talk about your next 83 years. The book is called My First 83 Years. What are your new challenges?
Well, I'm taking notes for the first time. You know, for my first 83 years, I kept no diaries, no notes, yep. no tapes. And I had to reconstruct everything from memory. It took a few months, and then it took a few months to edit it. Now I think I'm going to set things down properly so that I really have a book ready to go. That's what the main thing, I think, that's going to happen. I also, since this book actually was a fairly easy project for me, despite mm-hmm. everything, I think I might do some other writing, too.
Very good. Golden era of television. You spoke on this in Palm Beach, Florida, and around the country, and also at Damon College in Buffalo. We have a minute left. When was the golden period of television?
To be honest with you, it's right now. I know that the golden age is referred to, the 50s, the great dramas and all. Well, that stuff is inconsequential, except as a experimental laboratory for what was to come. I believe that the golden age of television is right now. You have more choices of excellent material, whether it be on cable or streaming or on your network stations even. They're still in business, by the way. And so I am all for supporting and celebrating the current television.
Very good. I'm sorry we have to bring the Rust Report on ESPN AM 1520 to a close. Again, our guest has been Paul Noble, the author of the book My First 83 Years, available at Amazon. Again, please subscribe to the Ampol Legal newspaper for events in Polonia and Poland. Special thanks to Kevin Carr, our director of production for 15 years. And thank you for enlightening us about your book, My First 83 Years, Paul Noble. Have a great week.
Only at True North Stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.